Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Jordan Hemker, 16 years of volunteer and career experience, a lieutenant with Harrison Township Division of Fire in Ohio, owner of Western Buckeye Training. Jordan is no stranger when it comes to doing more with less with the department he serves. From a young age, the moment he ran his first call as a volunteer, it was a wrap, and Jordan knew this is what he wanted to do. From our conversation, you could tell Jordan has a love for the fire service, just like the rest of us who are into the job. With that, I present Mr. Jordan Hemker.
My name is Jordan Hemker. I am a lieutenant with the Harris Township Division of Fire. I've been with Harris Township for going on 3 years now, and I started in Northwest Ohio as a firefighter paramedic, and then I moved down to Central Ohio about 3 years ago with my wife. And what got me into the fire service was it's a very detailed, I don't want to call it a story, experience. When I was 16 years old and a sophomore in high school, I had two friends killed in a car accident. So with that experience, so Chris and Cody were driving, and there was another individual in the car as well. They were being kids, doing dumb stuff, and it ended tragically. So this was in my hometown that I grew up in, obviously, and I found out like 9 a.m. from my best friend who called me, and we all ended up going up to the hospital to see Chris. Cody had already been, had already died and all that stuff. And so it was kind of weird because they had all, I don't want to say it was weird. It was Chris's family wanted the kids to see everything. Okay. And so in that, you had Chris on life support. He was, considered brain dead at the time, and they were going to donate his organs. So we're waiting for the team to come in to have surgery and harvest his organs for donation. So Chris is in one room and Cody's in the other room. So they let the kids kind of go have their moments with them. And then in that process of Chris being on life support, Chris's uncle was maintaining his airway. And so Chris's uncle was a firefighter paramedic at the time. And through that whole experience, seeing those guys in that state, it was like, wow, this is insane. So finally the team arrived. They did what they did. A few weeks go by, and obviously as a 16-year-old kid, you just experienced something that was pretty traumatic, life-changing. You know, those were very good friends when I was young, and it's funny because that happened over 20 years ago. But you still process those emotions today. And it influenced me to go towards the fire service because of Chris's uncle. Life goes full circle. That's one thing I learned out of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. So through that, my best friend's dad, the kid that called me, his dad was a shift officer at the time, the fire department that responded to the accident. So I had reached out to that individual, and he led me towards a volunteer fire department that was like 15 minutes down the road from where my parents lived. And they had a cadet program. And that's how I got in the fire service, was through that cadet program and the experience of the passing of Chris and Cody. So 16 years old, I'm on the fire department as a junior cadet, and we weren't allowed to do fire ground things at 16 years old. A lot of rules were made after I was on the fire department as a cadet, mm-hmm. but we were able to train with the guys, go on runs and things like that. Like I remember my first run as a teenager was a car accident on Mudsock Road in Auglaize County. If anyone from Ohio is listening in the area, it was a Code 4. It was a blue Chevy S10, but we were in the firehouse on like a Sunday afternoon, just doing some stuff, and the top siren blew for the volunteer station, and I'm like, what is going on? And they're like, we got to run. So you threw the old the bunker gear on.
Right.
We get into the rescue, and I'm like, this is nuts. Sirens are going. I was hooked. Like, I knew this is what I wanted to do at that moment. So stayed on the fire department for Also, I volunteered on that fire department for 10 years. And then as I progressed from my teenage years, well, I was 18 and a senior in high school. And in Ohio, you can become a volunteer firefighter. So I got my volunteer firefighter as a senior in high school. And then I was actually like, I thought I had the world. I was able to go to fires, go to car wrecks, and all that stuff. I would leave school to go on runs and then come back to school during the day. I always had like a small job growing up, living at my parents' house. So I would either be at work, fire department, or hanging out with friends. Like that was my early teens and going into school. And then I went to Hocking College in Southern Ohio, and I was down there for 2 years. I got my 240 medic for Ohio. That's our professional certification. And then I got introduced to the Central Ohio Fire Service, which is like Columbus, Ohio kind of area, a little more urban, built up kind of place. And I was like, yeah, this is the fire service I want to work in. But at the time, it was 2012, 2013. It was kind of difficult to get a full-time job. I mean, that was a time where you were getting hundreds of applications for
Right, right,
different time.
right, absolutely.
And so I was kind of struggling to get a job in the Central Ohio area. Yeah, I was still living I was living with my college roommate at the time, and I was like, hey, I gotta do something. So I caught wind that the fire department that responded on Crystal Cody was hiring, and that was my hometown. So I put an application in, I got hired, and I was 22, 23 years old, full-time firefighter paramedic in my hometown. So I worked there for 2 to 3 years, and then I decided that I wanted a little bit of change in my work path, and I went to a neighboring fire department. But that neighboring fire department, their shift commander of the B shift that I went to was Chris's uncle. And so I actually worked for under Chris's uncle for 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it went full circle.
Right.
So that was that was one of those really cool experiences. And that's the beauty of the fire service. You know, there's so many hidden things in it. You got to experience things to discover it. You got to get out there and experience these things to find it. So I worked at that fire department for about 6 years, and then an opportunity had presented itself in Central Ohio, and so my wife and I jumped, and we made the move. So that's been my a busy couple of years for us, for sure.
Okay. No, it started off somber how you got into it, but like you said, man, everything comes back full circle. In the grand scheme of things, the United States is large, but man, if you really get down to the weeds of it, somebody that knows this person, and it's just crazy how things just happen.
It's funny, like if my wife and I are out and about, I mean, literally I could be in a place where you wouldn't think that I would run into somebody that, it's that phone a friend, phone a fireman kind of thing. It cracks me up. It's funny. She's like, "Are you kidding me?"
How is it that we go out and you know
It
it's just the way it is, man? It's
is.
no, it's awesome. That's awesome. Definitely goes to show brotherhood's not dead, as much
Yeah,
as people like to say it is.
exactly. You're 100% correct.
My next question for you would be, what does the term aggressiveness mean to you?
So, man, that is such a hot topic anymore in the fire service. I think aggressive is a mindset. It's a mindset you have to be in, and being prepared. If you prepare for your job, taking runs, the what if scenarios, I think you're gonna be okay. You're gonna handle that situation. When we get out of that mindset that we're gonna take runs for the shift, we might see something terrible, we might do something great. If you just kind of come in with that lackadaisical thought process, you're gonna fail without a doubt. And I think being aggressive is putting the people that you serve first, and then your shift and your the people within the organization. That's being aggressive. It's 100% all the time. And when you deviate from that, you really get those spurs in the process. And I think that just turns really bad really quick. One of my sayings or findings. Actually, my wife found it for me and said, I think this, it, my wife's a big part of my thought process, my mindset. She's my sounding board.
Okay.
She found this, and I don't know who quoted it or anything like that, but it's the future belongs to those who prepare.
Okay.
And I've really bought into that over the years. And it actually became our slogan for our training company, that we put like at the bottom of the emails, and it's just kind of what we bought into. You know, if you prepare yourself, you're going to own what's going to come ahead. It might be tough. It might be one of those moments where you got to reevaluate things, but you've got to stick with it.
No, definitely. Definitely. And I like how you put that. Your wife is your backbone. She is your number two, your partner, because oh, yeah, mine is sure. The same way. Cause I'm telling you, before I met her, dude, I was a hothead. It was like, yeah. I'm not really going to think, I'm going to react. And it's funny how when you meet somebody, me and her, we're total opposites. But when you meet somebody, how they can help you and guide you, and instead of reacting, process it, think.
It's
like
a balance.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a huge balance. And, you know, when I'm thinking about like things at the fire department or, you know, aggressive, is like, what would my wife want me to do? Or what would my family want me to do if they were in that situation? They want that fireman who's going to give it their all. They're going to go 100 miles an hour to make it happen. Or is it going to be the, well, you know, there's a lot of fire showing right there, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're going to do your job. And that's kind of how I base a lot of things off of it. And, you know, like the fire first mentality is really important. I work for an organization that we transport EMS. You know, EMS is a big part of our job. It's what we do. But my ambulance says Harrison Township Division of Fire on the side. It doesn't say EMS or anything like that. Like, we're firefighters. We got to do some fireman stuff. You know, and I think it's really bad. It's the fire service in general. If you work, I'm not going to claim that we're fire dogs by any means. We don't go to a working fire every day, you know, that kind of stuff. But if you keep that fire first mentality, you keep that aggressive mentality as well. But we're also aggressive in EMS. We're also aggressive in fire prevention. We're also aggressive in every aspect of what we do. You can't just kind of relax on everything, you know, like,
right.
It's just a mindset. It's where are you keeping your preparedness at? You know,
no,
that's how I view it.
No. I totally get you. And I like it, because I like how you mentioned how, yes, you guys do transport, and it's okay. There are departments out there that's what they do. They do both. But what I really like is the fact that you said, just because you ride an ambulance doesn't mean that you're a fireman. And you mentioned you don't go to a lot of fires, but that doesn't mean your medical skills should lax, because you don't, you know what I mean? Because you don't go to fires. Like, we have to be good at all. You can't be a great fireman, but like, oh, I needed blood pressure. Like, you can't be a shitty blood pressure taker. You got to be able to know how to do everything.
And that's we'll kind of jump ahead a little bit. You know, like staffing for my organization, you know, we have for the most part a dedicated engine crew. It's 3 to 4 people. It just depends on how the staffing is for the day. But that engine crew, and this has been my entire career, all 3 fire departments I worked at full time, cross staffing. You know, we might jump from the medic truck, the medic unit, to the quint, to the tanker, to the engine, and then all, we got a boat run. Now I got to do the boat. Like, my organization is a do it all company. Like, I have to be intelligent in just about every field that there is. We're not real heavy on tech rescue kind of stuff, and that's just because of budgets and, you know, things of that nature. And we have a lot of organizations that help support that for us.
Right.
But my individuals on shift or in the organization need to have a pretty well foundation of what they're doing when they show up. How can I set them up to be successful? Which we experienced that. We had a confined space run in July of last year, and that was probably the first technical run of that magnitude in 17 years. At least I know from my captain, because he was the one that made the comment, because I've never done this in 17 years. And it was one of those, it was one of those high risk, low frequency kind of runs that you deal with. And we were all aggressive in some way, shape, or form on that run. We were aggressive in setting up the scene for success, making sure our people were not going to be exposed to something that we weren't, that we as an organization weren't prepared for. We had emotional intelligence and emotional discipline on that run, and that was tough. And it all comes back to being prepared and knowing your limitations. I think that's another part of preparedness is, hey, we know this isn't our avenue of things, but this is what we're going to do to help make it a successful scene. And it was pretty crazy. It was nuts.
No, I like it. I like it. I mean, because there are departments out there that there are departments out there and organizations that aren't afforded the fact that, hey, all right, when I'm on shift, engine one is your apparatus for the entire shift. No, there are departments that have to cross that you have to, I call it musical fire trucks. It is what it is. There are
It is.
departments that, you some of them don't have four man people. It's just two guys, but those two guys are dialed in. So
Yeah, and that's and that falls on the individual themselves. They got to have that mentality of I got to be really good at everything kind of thing. And I don't really like that saying, because you can't be good at everything, if
right,
that makes
100%.
sense. But for us, we truly have to, because my engine crew could be cutting a ventilation hole. My engine crew could be doing the auto extrication. My engine crew could be, anything and everything that's needed on the fire ground. And my organization covers 127 square miles out of one station with eight firefighters a day, plus mutual aid. So we're doing a lot with a little. So it's really important for them to be, like you said, dialed in. And it makes for an interesting shift, that's for sure,
I
with
can
that
imagine.
type of demographic.
Okay. So you said your department operates at one station, 127 square miles. What's in each, or what's at that station, like as far as the lineup of apparatus?
So we have two engines. The first out engine 801, is what we staff as first out. That has anywhere between 3 to 4 firefighters. I would say more on the three firefighter side of things, for the most part. And then we have a second out engine that could be staffed anywhere between one, two, three people. It just depends on how the day goes,
Right.
because our medic crews jump from their trucks to the second out engine. So if they're out
Gotcha.
on runs, we're not. If both medics are out, that engine sits. Or if you have if you're kind of thinking on the fly when the run comes in as an officer or the senior guy, you might pull one of your backsteppers and have them bring that truck out. So then I lose that individual. So, there's on the fly decisions that are made, especially on the dispatch, things that you're kind of paying attention to, knowing your run district. Those opportunities. And then we have two medic units. We have a brush truck, and then we just dove into, a couple of years ago, the water rescue world. So we have
Okay.
a boat and things of that nature, and that has been a big learning curve for us. So that changes everything for a response going to those. So yeah, it's
Okay.
been that's it's pretty dynamic, and it's just one of those things. As an officer, an officer, I don't want to say you want to control everything, but you want to have like a constant. Sometimes the constant is just chaos. And you just got to kind of learn how to live in the chaos sometimes.
Is it safe to say the area, anywhere from densely urban populated to rural, definitely you have water areas because you have a boat, brush type of thing, so pretty much a vast array.
Yeah, so in that 127 square miles, we cover four villages that population is growing like crazy. We're getting a lot of 2, 3, 4 story apartment complexes coming.
Okay.
Obviously, older to newer construction. I mean, I think in the 3 years that I've been there, we've had well over 600 homes built throughout the district, and big developments, things like that. We cover a warehouse district, 13 warehouses, give or take, with 400,000 square feet to 1 million square feet.
Right.
We have a intermodal for a train intermodal that comes in. I mean, we've got so much stuff that it's a lot to process and kind of keep in your mind, like,
Right.
what are we preparing for today?
Right.
You know?
Right. Okay. And as far as so let's just say a structured firebox comes out in your first due, you have mutual aid companies coming in as well?
Yep, so we have mutual aid. Again, the growing pains of our area. We just started run cards
Okay.
district, so it's that has been a learning curve, because it always used to be I had to individually ask for departments and their
Understood.
apparatus,
Understood.
the mother may I process. So we're growing and learning on that. Typically, it's 3 to 4 engines and then a ladder truck in the hydrant area, and then out in the country it's engines and tankers that
Okay.
we're getting. So it's and we have the freedom to, we can special call certain apparatuses that we know that are out, that are available. We can do that as well. But I would say, you know, it sounds crazy when you hear 127 square miles. Like, my longest drive from the firehouse to the run district's 18 minutes to get to that. But some of our mutual aid might beat us there just because of the geography and where they're located.
Okay.
I would say in that complexity, like, we've worked so well together as a county, and the organizations, we're all pretty much running the same footprint, engine rescues, you know, water supply, that kind of stuff. So, like, if they show up first due, hey, we're here to, we're here. What do you need? You
It is what it
know,
is.
it's not a back and forth dance or anything like that. That's the one thing I truly do love about where we're at in our county.
Okay. And I love hearing that because I mean it's baffling that in 2024 you still have I know I've read articles where because it's in this jurisdiction, this department that's closer than the primary district will not respond in
Yes.
unless they're requested. Like the whole borders in the emergency services field needs to go away. If
Wild.
you can't You have no control of how big your first due is. And unfortunately, if there's another department that's closer, add them on the call. The citizen doesn't care the name of
Exactly.
the truck or the color of the truck that
A
shows
hundred
up.
percent.
But it's crazy we still have this
I know
issue, man.
it is. And you know, you are so correct about it. They don't care what the I can't tell you how many times we've had a backup apparatus from another organization, and they go, "Oh, did you guys get a new truck?" They don't, you know, like, you know, it's funny. And the fire service itself, I think we still get kind of stuck in our macho-ness, our you know, we're gonna handle this. This is our run. You know, I agree to a certain aspect, but at the same time, what's best for the individual calling 911? They come first. Their needs come first. You know, the guys, I have a couple sayings that I know that when they hear this, they're gonna roll their eyes. Like, if it's 2 in the morning and fire's blown out 2 windows, I don't want to find out we don't know what we're doing. And you know, if it's a BS run to you as an emergency to them, that mentality, that mindset, if you live your entire career, that's aggressive mindset, by the way. Like, if you live your life and your career through that thought process, you're gonna make right decisions. You're gonna do those right things, is how I've based my entire career. And I learned at a very young age that I always thought a little different than most. When I was at my first full-time agency in 2015, myself, my younger brother, and another guy, we went to Orlando Fire Conference in 2015. And when I went down there and did the trainings and all that stuff, we came back home. The guys were kind of asking about this class stuff, and the senior guy literally told me, like, "You keep that shit to yourself. That's not how we do things here." And I was just like, Okay, all right, man. Wasn't really expecting that from him. He's kind of out of character, but
Right.
that was when I was like, I'm a little different than most guys in the fire station, is how I learned that pretty quick. But
Right.
that's.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. And the how you worded, like, how it all comes back to aggressiveness. I also look at it as you can't treat a patient differently at 3 p.m. than you can at 3 a.m. It's all the damn
100%.
same. Regardless if,
Exactly.
hey, you're tired, it's part of the
It
you know
is.
what you signed up for.
Exactly.
You know?
100%, man. 100%. And like,
Crazy.
I've learned that, and I think at life has chapters, right? And
Right.
in certain things will bother guys and affect guys differently. Like, and you gotta, as an officer, you gotta kind of know your people and know where they're at in the chapter of life. And if you get a complaint or someone's like, hey, such and such is doing something different on runs, how they're treating people on runs and patients and stuff, like those are those cues that an officer or a senior guy or whoever needs to pick up on. It's like, hey, what's going on? Like, that's kind of out of character for you. And then you get guys that treat people nice, and you're like, hey, well, that's really out of character for you. What the heck's going on?
Right.
Those types of things. So it, Andy Fredericks, this is what another saying I always kind of use is, the proof's in the performance, right? Like, we're performers on these scenes, and you got to perform. We give a shitty product to the community. Like, you're going to be on Facebook, you're going to be on YouTube. We have these Facebook groups in the community where they're like the friendly neighbors and things like that, and it's
Right.
everyone has them in their area, and it'll be on there like that. There's no it's just the way it is. We live in a
Yeah.
fast world. I remember when I worked at back home in Northwest Ohio, we had an overdose, and that was when Facebook Live like first came out and was like a thing. And we're literally carrying this patient out on the tarp and getting them into the truck. And we were on Facebook Live doing this. So we called to do our call into the ER. And they're like, yeah, we saw you on the internet. We'll see you in a few. It's like, holy smokes, man. That's wild.
Right. Yeah. Especially nowadays with technology the way it is now, like the Citizens First app that I know that they got out there and all this other craziness, man. Like, yeah, if you're trying to hide it, it's, I mean, because I don't care where you're at. I don't care what the call is. If a fire truck and ambulance show up, somebody's going to be doing that out there record
For
just to
sure.
see what's going on. So, next topic for you, realistic training on a small budget. It affects, I think, more departments that we actually think it does. But what do you do for your department when it comes to giving your members the most realistic training possible?
I'm a big believer of dumpster diving. Like, get out there and find material. If people have stuff on the side of the road, like, I know it sounds crazy, but there's some golden gems out there that you can get your hands on for drills. If people are throwing away metal, like, I snag that stuff up and we use it for the rotary saws. We'll build window props out of them, things of that nature. You got to be creative for a small budget training. You got to have the imagination. Like, another thing I always say is, hey, in pretend land, this is a window bar. And when we hold it up against a window and we get out in the run district, I create a lot of relationships. And I think every fire department should do this, is create relationships with your residents that you personally know in the area, and ask them, hey, would I be able to set up a training drill in your front yard? Like, we won't break anything. It'll be nice and easy, but we want to pull a couple lines and maybe gently put a ladder up against your house. Maybe scale the intensity of that drill back just a little bit, so we're not going to create damage or anything like that to the yard, things of that nature. Or I always do walkthroughs of downtown buildings. We have an older downtown area, and we'll walk in and say, I've got two new guys. Are you cool if we walk through here real quick? And then it's, hey, let's park the engine here this time and see how far this hose can get. It's those things there, but The other thing that I've learned is if you just talk to people in the community or businesses and say, I need some help getting some lumber, they'll donate it in a heartbeat. And then you can build the pallet mansion, you know.
Right.
So one thing that we do quite a bit, and it's a slight benefit to the organization with the training company that I have. They use my props a lot. It's actually kind of become like Harrison Township's props. We do a lot on shift with it, and all three shifts utilize it. But what we did was we just built traveling walls, and they're the you just buy a sheet of OSB and you slap some 2x4s on it and you throw them up and make a hallway. I think for like 3 months we did pushes, writ, and like survivability just with the pallet paradise in the back of the firehouse. It was good quality stuff. And we actually had a mutual aid captain come and look at it. And he goes, I didn't realize how much quality training I could get out of a couple screws and some lumber, those types of things is where I think the drills really come into play. So I'm also a believer of you can't be a parking lot warrior as well. So
True.
you got to take it from the parking lot. The crawl, walk, run theory to training, right? Like, we're gonna go slow here in the parking lot. We're gonna pull a line. We're gonna flow water. Do this thing. But now we're gonna take it to that neighbor that I have relationships with, front yard of their house. Okay, cool. We did that. So in April, my organization has live fire drills planned at our state fire academy up the road. So everything that we've done in the cheap budget is now going to be full scale at the expensive budget training. And I think everything that we've built is going to really blossom on that live fire, which that's the first time our organization's ever done anything like this, the live fire drills. I'm really excited to see where this goes for us with that. I'm kind of going over my notes that I have written down
You're
for as
fine.
well. So some of the easy drills that I do, actually, this was something that one of my part-timers brought to the table from his full-time agency. They'll take topics or equipment in the trucks, street names, apartment complexes, numbering systems, things like that, and we type it all up on the computer as a running list, and then we cut them into little slots of paper, and we put them in a hat, and then
Okay.
whatever you pull out of the hat, that's your topic for the shift. You got 15 minutes to prepare something for it. Or if it's a street name, you pull the street name out. Hey, where's this at? How do I get there? It's kind of on the fly kind of things as well. And if any of my rookies are listening to this here in the next few days, or they're going to be assigned a line of duty death report that correlates to staffing of our organization, building construction in our run district, and it's either going to be a violent fire event, a building collapse, whatever the demographic of it is, and they got to give like a book report to
Okay.
us, teach the shift. On in our rookie book, the new hires, they have to teach something to the shift, and so that's going to be their teaching topics is a line of duty death report to us. It's going to be one of their drills. So you just got to be creative, be open to other things. If someone from another agency, or we utilize part-time staffing,
Okay.
those guys work full-time at other agencies or part-time other agencies. If they did a really cool drill and they're like, hey, we want to try it here, let's do it. Be open. Don't live in that bubble. The bubble is what's going to destroy everything. And that's just, yeah, you gotta pop the bubble.
No, I absolutely agree 100%. So I mean, it's probably safe to say that you are probably in favor of outside training.
Yes, for sure. 100%. Outside training is probably and this is my humble opinion. This isn't the opinion of Harrison Township or anything, but you have to get out there and learn other ways of doing things. You have to get out there and see. I always tell people, like, if you go to this outside training and you come back and you're full of piss and vinegar and you want to try stuff, that's great. I love it. But you also need to kind of filter out some of the things that
Bingo.
Some of the factors that whoever's teaching that, like, just for an example, I could go to a small organization and teach a topic, but I'm kind of basing it off of what I know in my world a little bit. I always tell them, you need to say, how's this going to work in XYZ fire department? How's this going to work with our staffing? But the only way you're going to learn that is by taking it back to your department and training on it. Hey, Lou, we just went over this in this class. Do you think we could try it? Yeah, absolutely. Teach me what you learned, and then we'll see what factors into it and what doesn't. That's the that is the beauty of the outside training, is it makes you think differently. And that's okay. It's okay to think differently. Try things. Like,
Right.
there's no shame in that. And guess what? You might find something that really works well, and you're gonna try something that goes terribly wrong. But try and figure out why it went terribly wrong. Was it because our staffing is just not able to support this? Is it, hey, maybe it's a lack of redundancy in our system. Maybe it's a lack of equipment in our system that we should probably look into. My organization currently at this time, we don't have a ram nozzle. So if we talk about blitzing a fire, it's the 2.5 or it's the deck gun. But
Okay.
we know that we need to go down that rabbit hole of a ram nozzle, or shouldn't just say the ram, but that type of nozzle. We know we need that, and we learn that from training and going out to different organizations and training with our mutual aid. What do these guys have that is beneficial? That type of stuff. So
Okay.
yeah,
Okay.
that's outside training is so important, and it keeps people interested and engaged in the job. So yeah.
No, this is true. No, I mean, there's no greater thing than like hearing a keynote speaker from what I call a heavy hitter, and then being able to actually talk one-on-one. And then the best thing with these outside training, these micro conferences, are the one-on-one time. Like, you can get as many reps as you want. Like, if a person's tired and they're just taking a water break, and they're like, hey, if you want to do it again, let's do it. Go for it. That's what I like about these micro conferences. I mean, yeah, they're still getting a good amount of participants, but it's not as big as like FDIC. So like, you can get as many reps as you want.
I always tell if we send some of our firefighters to these trainings, like, if you don't get the sets and reps, that's on you.
Right.
That's 100% on you, because I been to these trainings, been to these drills. I have a pretty good idea of how they're put together and all that stuff. Like, you come back and you say, oh, no, it's like, were you really into it? That kind of stuff. And the other thing about the outside training is the networking, because I've been very lucky and fortunate in my career to go out and do these things and whatnot. It's now the opportunity to send our younger ones out to do these trainings and these drills. And then when I hear them come back and they're talking about all the instructors, or they went out and had dinner with, a group of firemen from across the country, it's like, that's so cool. Like, I'm so glad you're able to see and do that. Like, that's what got the passion in so many of us in the fire service. And now you're finally seeing it and experiencing it. And it just, that's those healthy, repeatable cycles you want in your organization. That's the outside drills, the camaraderie. They go out and they said they had a beer with, like you said, a heavy hitter, or something like that. Like, that's cool. That's what you want. And they're
Right.
gonna come back full piss and vinegar, ready to train, ready to do some stuff. And then the fire chief's freaking out because he's like, oh, great, I gotta spend more money. But that's a part of the game.
No, I agree. I agree. Okay. Before I ask your next question, I have a personal question. What is a ram nozzle?
So the
Because I
ram.
it might be a different terminology,
Okay.
but I'm just trying to figure.
It's that rapid attack monitor. It's that quick nozzle you can throw down on the ground and get like 500 GPM out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of these guys.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So you see, that's the thing. Like the lingo. That's the thing with the fire service too. Depending on where you're from, everybody uses a different terminology. So when you said ram, I'm like trying to think, what's a ram nozzle? Okay.
So that would be like a dedicated rapid attack monitor, and that's the Elkhart nozzle.
Gotcha.
For the viewer, I had a RAM nozzle in my office because I'm a
Yes.
nerd. Or for the listener, I should say, sorry. So like, and there's different brand. Like back home, it was a Throwdown nozzle
Okay.
back in Northwest Ohio, because that was the brand that was in the area, that kind of
Okay.
stuff. But yeah, so that's just a quick attack monitor that you can throw on the ground, hit it with 500 GPM, and then shut it down or extend off of it. It's a really nice nozzle for defensive fires, that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. All
And you're
right.
right, man. The lingo is different throughout the area. It's just nuts, because I spent a good chunk of my career in Northwest Ohio in our terminology. And then I came to Central Ohio, and we would talk about things, and I'm kind of like, it's kind of the same thing we just had happen. Like, what are you talking about, man? And it's
Right.
the same damn thing. It's just,
Right. They just call it something totally
yeah,
different. And it's
for
like,
sure.
oh,
Oh, all right.
okay.
Makes sense. Yeah.
All right. Next topic, big topic, leadership.
Yeah. Leadership, that's a buzzword right now. It
Yeah,
truly
yeah, no, you're right. You're
is.
right.
I think leadership, first off, anybody and everybody can be a leader in your fire department. And it's not just fire service related. It's life in general.
Right.
I found I have always found that you're going to have good leaders, you're going to have bad leaders. And the bad leaders teach you what not to do, or what you don't want to see happen if you ever find yourself in that position or role. Growing up in the fire service, the leadership was very, man, I don't know. It was very supported by the senior fireman. So the senior
Okay.
fireman was always a big deal to myself.
Okay.
And I always gravitated towards that informal leadership. And so I personally stayed in that realm of informal leadership. Always support the officers, support them in training, give them topics. Hey, Cap, Lou, Chief, I know you're busy today. We're gonna do this. You do what you gotta do, and then come back. Because there's days where an officer is just absolutely slammed with officer stuff. That's
Right.
and an officer who finds themselves in that situation, they need to tell their guys, hey, I gotta do some officer stuff today. You guys take care of what you need to take care of, and I'll be out in a couple hours. And I get that. I live that. It is what it is. But if I could like put together like a true leadership class, it's one, you gotta be a good person, be a good human being, be a human being, be understanding that there's feelings and emotions, and there's things going on outside the firehouse that we don't know. And you gotta learn your individuals. And then you gotta have common sense. Common sense. I think we're
It's
lacking
not
that
that
so much.
common, man.
Like, I'm not perfect. There's no such thing as a perfect person or perfect individual. I have made bad decisions. I've made mistakes as a fire instructor. I made mistakes as a husband. I made mistakes as a brother, but when you learn from them and you grow from them, that's where leadership comes from, in the moments there. And leadership is like that onion. There's so many layers to it. So being a leader in the firehouse versus a leader in on the fire ground is kind of different for me. In the firehouse, the guys have a little bit more leeway. They have a lot more things that they can add to it. But as soon as we cross that door, leadership's a little different. If you have a concern, I will listen to it. But this is the route that we're going to kind of go until we don't need to go that route anymore. It's a safety thing, obviously. Obviously, it's a safety thing. But what really helps that is standards and expectations. If everyone's on the same page of expectations and the operations, then we should be moving smooth sailing until that oh shit moment presents itself. And then
Agreed.
hey, Lou, this isn't really working. Here's plan A, here's plan B, here's plan C. You know, plan A don't go very well. I'm looking to the guys like, let's plan B, let's plan C. We gotta come up with this right now.
Definitely.
You know, we have as an organization, our engine culture was kind of our engine culture was not really there a couple of years ago. And then we had some changes. We finally got some equipment in, and we got some good fire hose in, and then that's when everything kind of clicked. And then actually, it was outside training that brought majority of the line officers together, and we all are like, hey, why are we fighting each other? Why are we doing this when we should be doing this? And then we trained on it, drilled on it, together in a very sunny state that has a beach down there, and it turned into, this is going to be our hose load, this is going to be our operations, this is the standard. And it has been very smooth ever since that outside training, and we've been really successful with operations. The guys have bought into it, and that's the key right there, is get the buy-in.
Absolutely.
Once you get the buy-in, it's you're solid.
No, agreed. Agreed. And I love the fact that how you worded that, how you stated it, because I can vivid the way you spoke about it, I can vision it in my head. Because it happens all the time in fire departments. Whether you have three shifts or four shifts for your platoon, man, they can all be different fire departments, but the same name. You know what I mean? Because
Oh,
one
yeah.
crew might not like the way the hose is loaded. And so when they get on shift, they're going to load it their way. And then the next crew comes in and loads it. And it's just, if we can all just listen to each other, get on the same page. And the biggest thing is find what works for your department. Like, I'm sure there's going to be people out there that are going to hate what I'm about to say, but whenever somebody goes to a conference and they're like, hey, I went to this conference and the guy that was teaching it or the girl that was teaching was FDNY. We're not FDNY. Understood, you're not, but you can take some of the stuff that they implement and use and make it work for your department.
Exactly. Yep. And you know, like, I know Chief Isaacson had just made a Facebook post about, you know, the FDNY, because they had a couple gnarly fires here lately. Like, a lot of the stuff that we do in these smaller organizations is just a little snippet of FDNY tactics, thought process, things like that. Central Ohio loves the 1516 smoothbore, and guess who runs the 1516 smoothbore? You know, it's that's you're doing it.
Exactly.
You're making it work for your place, and that's okay. That's
Exactly.
absolutely fine.
Exactly.
And nothing's new in the fire service.
No, it's like, you know how everything comes full circle? I swear,
Yeah.
I feel like we are going in, because I remember back in the day when I started, man, it was nothing if you had an engine that's hose bed was high. I looked at it was normal. It was
Yep.
normalized. And
Yep.
all of a sudden it's, no, that's terrible. Low hose beds. But talking to what I call the old heads, they're like, hey, low hose beds isn't new. We had it back in the day, and then we got rid of it and went to high or medium size. Now it's low again, or everything off the rear or crossways. Like, it's
Yep.
just a vicious cycle.
It is. And it's you know, that's a rabbit hole that I can go down. With the engine is my heart. That's where I'm at. But I have to build a fire truck that works for so many different things in my run district with my staff, and that's where we get in trouble. Maybe we overload this truck with hose and equipment on top of water. Like, I 127 square miles. I bet you not even 20 miles of my district is hydrated. You know, so I need to bring water. You know, my pumper is 1,300 gallons. That's a tall tank and a tall hose bed. It's pre-connected. It's not my dream engine by any means, but it's what I have, and it's what I gotta be really good at. And that's the key, is those operational realities. You know, everyone talks about pulling pass. You know, yes, I'm 100% on board, but on a farm lane, my tactics gonna be a little different. on that farm lane than it would be on an in-town fire. So you have to be able to go through the Rolodex in your mind of positioning and tactics and hose pulls and all that stuff. And the other thing is y'all gotta be on the same page in that truck.
Yeah.
Even in the captain's buggy, what's my engine crew gonna be doing when they pull up? And if you understand all the moving parts, then all the tactics and strategy comes together for sure. And like, if I could build the perfect engine, it would be like, for my run district, it would be like a 2,500 gallon pumper tanker with a low hose bed pulling off the rear. Like, if I could ever make that happen, that would be my dream truck for my run district. But that's, if there's any engineers listening, you get some business
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, you have to adapt with what you have. And I think it was maybe one of John Sparrow's quotes or images he put on there. Like, you can't. I'm gonna butcher it, but it was pretty much like the notion of, if you don't have a low hose bed, your hose bed's high, and you don't have Minuteman lines, get good at pulling the line that you have. Like, it's not your fault, or it's not saying that one department's better than the other. You have to work with what you got. And you can't complain about it.
And like, as a fire instructor, when we go in and we do these classes and things like that, it's not coming in and trying to change your world. It's to make your world a little bit better and a little bit more efficient. I know you're not going to do a 100 foot bundled modified Minuteman hose load. I know that's not what you're going to do, but maybe your triple layer, pull it this way a little bit different. Or if you run a flat load, have you tried inverting it on a two and a, just those types of different things, just to show them some efficiency on the fire ground, making those stretches, or whatever it might be. It doesn't have to be engine based stuff, but you can't go in there thinking you're gonna Minuteman or die. It's the way it is. I know organizations that run a triple because they cover all rural, they have the long farm lanes and the setbacks. Like, it works for them. That's great. Let's be better at it. I ran the triple for a long time back home, and we were good at it. Wasn't my favorite hose load, but we were good at it. It's just one of those things. This isn't the most beautiful fire truck in the world. This isn't the most spec truck for us, but we're good at it. It's the way it is.
Absolutely. No, you're right. And I also like the fact that you mentioned earlier, as a crew, with you being an officer, if plan A doesn't work, I truly hope to God that crews out there have a plan B, C, D, because it's not always going, nothing that we do is black and white. Just because you roll up on a routine medical call, lift assist, doesn't mean you're going to get what dispatch tells you. You might roll up and be like, what's going on here? And if you don't have a B, C, D, E, some audibles, destined to fail.
And you have to train on them audibles. You just can't throw it out there at 2 in the morning, blowing out two windows. And Lou said, "Hey, we're doing a long lane or a long line. For us, we have to build that long line. You just can't throw that on them and not train on it, because it's gonna fail."
No,
You
you're
know,
right. You're
those are
right.
those moments and opportunities that, and from day one, kind of throwing out some dirty laundry of my organization. It's not really dirty. So our part-time staffing is these are kids that this is their first fire job. This is a stepping stone move for them, and I'm okay with that, because the way I view it is they're coming to two unit, which is my shift, or whatever. I can always speak for my shift, right? They come to two unit and they get their expectations from day one. Day one, they do engine operations, because there's a pretty good chance they could probably pull a line in the first 15 minutes they're at the firehouse. So they're going to learn that first. That's what they're going to do. When they work at Harrison Township and then they decide that they want to move on or do something or get another job, whatever the case might be, if they put Harrison Township on their application, I want the surrounding agencies to be like, "Oh, you were at Harrison? oh yeah, you got your stuff together. That's what I want. That's, to me, that's a positive thing in the organization. You know, like I said earlier, it took many, many, many applications, many, many interviews, and you weren't getting a job in 2012, 2013. You know, it was tough. Fire service today, it's a revolving door, unfortunately. And it's not a Harrison Township problem. It's not a Columbus Division of Fire problem. It's not, it is a systemic fire service of the United States problem.
Absolutely.
So I got to make sure that if someone is wearing a Harrison Township patch, they're dialed in, they're squared away. It is what it is. And I love new people because they're so young, they're eager, they want to get into it, they want to learn. I know that, like, the internet and going to things, and you know, everyone's like, man, these new kids, they're such a pain in the butt. They don't want to do anything. You know, there's two sides to every story, mm-hmm. right? Like, are you the dude that's in the recliner,
mm-hmm.
or are you the dude that's out there, you know, teaching them things? It's not their fault the way they were raised. You know, no one told me, as a informal leader and as a promoted officer, that you were going to be the firehouse dad in 2024. Like, you're the dad of the fire department in the shift. Like, not only am I a leader, but I'm also teaching them life skills. And not I don't want to say just me, like my guys, right. You guys, you know, things right. like that. But you're teaching them life skills. You're teaching them how to cook. You're teaching them time management. Like, the average age for my place, our organization, is early 20s, just getting started in life. So be that positive influence on them. Is it times where it's physically and emotionally draining? Yes.
Oh, I'm sure, right.
It is. But at the same time, they're going to be the reflection of what you put into them.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yep.
And that's the beauty of having these new kids coming into the organization. You know, does it suck that it feels like every couple months I have to go through a book again, a rookie book? Yeah, it does. But at the same time, I'm still getting my hand on a fire hose. I'm still doing pump operation. I'm still getting training in for the other guys. It's just, it becomes repetitive. And that's where balling on a budget and kind of being creative with your training really comes into place on keeping it kind of new for the guys that have been with the organization for a little bit, and my full-timers and things like that. But, like, I love getting the new guys in the fire department, because it makes it fun. It makes it I've seen in our place, I've seen a big influx of applications and things like that. So it kind of gives me, you know, people are wanting to get back into the fire service.
Right.
That's not every experience that we've had at our place. We've had others that, you know, it's just, it is what it is. And maybe they cycle out. Maybe they find another job. Okay. You know, we all know that this job isn't for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. And you got to give them a fair opportunity and a fair chance to go through that rookie book, go through the process. And some are rock stars and some are not.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
The way it is.
And I like how you perfectly hit the nail on the head with when it comes to the new people. If you are a fireman on that truck or the driver, but especially if you are the company officer, all of them are important. But if you are the company officer, and you blame that generation, or you look at your firemen and you're like, why don't you know anything? But realistically, you've never went out and shown them things. That's your problem. You can put the blame on the individual all you want, but especially, like I said, if you're the company officer, that's on you. You can't expect them to perform the way you want if you don't go out and do any training with them.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, like, I've had kids come in that never use chainsaw, power
right.
saw, you know, like, this is that opportunity to be that mentor and actually mentor and teach them and show them, you know, that's, and guess what? they probably never once had that opportunity growing up in their home life, and that's okay. That's not their fault.
Nope, not at all.
You know, it's a different era of the firefighters that we're getting. Because here's what cracks me up is, yeah, they might struggle or lack knowledge on the power tools and things of that nature there. But when a dude needs someone to convert a file to a PDF or Word or anything iPad related, who's the first person they're going to? They're going to that 20-year-old kid. That's who they're, you know, like, so there's a trade-off. You know?
Absolutely.
And if you're going to be an asshole to them, they're probably not going to help you out.
Exactly. They're going to be like, I don't know how to do that. They could do that in their sleep with their eyes closed. No, exactly. I agree, because I was once, like, when I was growing up, when I got into the fire service, my background, I mean, my both my parents worked, but I have never ran a chainsaw. I ran a lawnmower because I used to love lawn back when I was little. I remember I used to love just grass and lawnmowers in general. But like, I remember getting to the fire service, like, have you ever ran a chainsaw? No. Do you know what two cycle mixed fuel is? I'm looking at them like, it's gas, right? Like, I was taught these things.
Yep.
So you can't blame the individual for not knowing these parts of our job if they're not susceptible to it. So anyways.
I was not a mechanically inclined person when I got into the fire service either, but it was guys in the firehouse that just took a moment and asked, hey, do you know what you're doing? Do you understand? And it's like, no, I really don't. You know, again, there's two sides to the story. Maybe that kid was being kind of a butthead about it, you know, and it pissed the senior guy off, or it pissed that guy off, and he had to walk away for a minute. You know, that does happen. I'm not going to discredit any of that by any means. You know, at that point, then I think, you know, some leadership needs to come forward and handle that, right?
Right.
But I think another success is the informal leaders on the shift, and then your officers, they got to kind of be on the same page on, all right, if you're getting frustrated with them, this is how you're going to handle it. You're going to walk away for a minute, take a breath, come at it again. If it doesn't get better, you come grab me. If I'm not around, I'll handle it. You know, that type of thing. You got to kind of have a game plan on how you're going to tackle these things.
Absolutely.
With it. So yeah, that's again, that's not that is a systemic thing that we're all experiencing.
Absolutely. Okay. I'm going to ask you the question of which characteristic, in your opinion, holds more weight: years of service, education, work ethic, or on-the-job experience?
So I kind of pondered on this one when I was going over our email chat we had. I think they're all pretty important in some way, fashion, but like work ethic and experience, I don't think those are things that can be truly taught per se. That's an individual's characteristic. You know, so if someone comes in with a good work ethic and they're able to complete tasks and kind of like manifest everything that's going on in the organization, that person is going to be more apt to catch on to other tasks, other functions. I can give them a workload and I know they're going to take care of it. Experience, I think experience is more than just the fire department's experience, the runs, things like that, life experience, you know, things like that. I can't control that outside of the organization, but I can control their experience within the building of, you know, their training, their exposure, their ability to handle the emotions from an EMS run that was tragic or traumatic or something like that, or that car wreck or something like that. You know, those are those things that the officer, the senior fireman, we can kind of influence a little bit. What I love about work ethic is you can kind of see that change and grow in someone very, very quickly as well. Because you might have that kid that we talked about, with that senior fireman, that maybe they started off a little rough, but they finally something clicked, you know, in there. And I have one kid in my mind right now that he struggled, and it was a he was in paramedic school, and so you know, there's a stress of that going on, and you know, like always studying, always in the books. Like I can't get mad at you about that, but you know, like you're kind of slacking these other things, and then something just clicked in him, and he ended up being a. At first, he was a turd, like straight up turd, in the fire department, and he was almost on the verge of getting let go. And it was a, hey, let's give him a little bit. He is in medic school, you know, all these things. And then he just something clicked, and I don't know what it was, but he turned into a rock star. And we were really sad when he got full time. He was one of our part timers. We were really sad when he got full time and left the station. But it was having those very intense conversations with him and say, hey, what's going on? Like, you know, you're not doing really well here. How can I help you? What can I do? And it all came back to work ethic. As soon as he got it, and he learned it, boom, he was solid fireman, solid paramedic. I loved it. I loved having him on shift with us, and his experience grew because he was understanding all these things that were going on in the background. So he was able to, like, you know, you can go on 500 fires and do the same thing over and over and over, but it's the same experience 500 different times, right? Like you got to learn from each one. I always kind of, you know, fire department says, hey, we go to a lot of fires. Like, okay, but you know, what are we growing from that? What are we learning from that experience? And I think those just go a long way. I'm kind of rambling on about it, but if someone has a good work ethic, I think they're gonna be very successful in your organization. Because you know, I always kind of laugh when I see on our application, we live in a farm town. So if we see a kid that's a farmer, we know that dude's gonna work. Like, so we kind of snag them guys up a little bit for our place, because we know they're gonna work. We know that, I mean, they literally work from dusk until, you know, it's just in their blood, in their nature. You know, those hold pretty strong to me. But also, it's you know, what are your goals? Are you goal driven work kind of work ethic? Are you just here because it's a paycheck kind of work ethic? You know what I mean? Like what's your why? You know, one of my really good friends, Jeff Rosenkrantz, teaches a program about the why and things like that. And you know, I've kind of taken that thought process a little bit from him and put it up when I talk to guys and they're learning and growing in the fire department. Like, why are you here? What are you doing? Is this what you want to do for your career? You know, what are your goals? Where are this? Where are that? Which, and then, you know, work ethic will be the first thing to say, hey, this person's gonna go very far. You know, it's like, I can't stand it when you go into the building and you see someone walk past something that they could have picked up and thrown away. Like, you know, those little things. I know that sounds kind of petty, but you know,
And it's true.
those little details could be the difference between a line getting pulled off successfully on the truck, or chasing those kinks, or catching that basement fire that the lieutenant missed on the size up. You know, those little details go a long way, and we're all watching each other's back on that. So yeah,
Absolutely.
those hold strong to me.
Okay. And lastly, you own a training company, Western Buckeye Training. So I call this the shameless plug, but I do this because there are people that don't know what they don't know. Like there are people who might not know, hey, you have this company, you put on these little conferences, these little training sessions that's in their backyard. Because not everybody can afford FDIC. I've never been, I'd love to go. What I hear, it's kind of expensive. And now, when I heard it was expensive, I know it's more expensive now because everything's more expensive.
But
So, like, there are conferences that people can, you know, maybe put out in their budget, have them set some money aside for this. So, this is like your time to shine. Like, what do you guys do? What do you teach? Like, give your whole spiel.
So Western Buckeye Training started in 2016. And it started as a firehouse kind of kitchen table dream. And I what inspired it was going to Atlanta Fire Conference, and I saw Chief Riley and Chief Martin do their combat ready lecture down there. Came home and was like, man, like this was awesome. And like you said, trainings were expensive and it was tough. And it's like, how can I bring this stuff home? How can we do this? And it kind of bled into let's build some props in the station and use them for drills and things like that. So the first prop I built was a through the lock prop. Taught that to all three shifts at the organization. It got destroyed. It was funny. And to the guys that know me that might listen to this, they're gonna be like, this dude can't build anything square or plumb or anything. And I can do a really nice weld. I really can't. It's awful. But that was the cool part about WBT though, was like when I started building these props and things, like I learned some hand skills, building things of that nature. And then it blossomed into, we're gonna bring forcible entry to your organization and we're gonna go over the why. That was like the gateway drug of passion and training to me, was starting to build these props, understanding things, and then like forcible entry, I didn't know a damn thing about it when I was a full-time fireman. I sucked at it. There's a video of us online trying to force a double hour swinging door. It took us 25 minutes to open it. Like, no joke. And it was like, I need to learn how to do this stuff. So built a door prop, brought into the station, and like became forcible entry kind of guys, is what we were kind of known for in the area. And then it just kind of blossomed into, I'm gonna take this to this volunteer agency up the road. And then we started doing trainings and things of that nature. And then it was, all right, well, you force the front door, what's next? So then it just kind of blossomed into tactics and strategies after the force. And then go to these conferences, you meet guys and gals that are into the job, and you're like, hey, you want to help out with this class? And then, so then I kind of got that cadre put together. And so now we travel pretty much through Ohio, gone to a couple conferences outside of the state, but the friendships and things like that as well. And I've made a lot of mistakes with WBT financially, like that's one of those things, like my wife's my background. Like I ask her, hey, is this a good idea? And she's like, probably not. And then I don't listen to her. And you know how that goes.
Right.
I made some mistakes as a fire instructor in the process, but you learn and grow. I made a lot of good friends through the process with it as well. And you learn and grow. But the best part is when we're able to bring, a full scale drill or maybe that simple topic of search to a smaller organization or maybe a larger organization, and you see people grow and progress in their skill set. And that's the best part about doing the trainings and things like that with WBT. We do, I don't want to say pretty much everything, because you can't be good at everything, you can't teach everything. So I've got
Right.
guys and gals that can teach certain subjects like forcible entry, search, engine operations, things like that. So we, I would say primarily forcible entry, first do tactics for that single engine response is our bread and butter. Tanker operations, some ventilation, things of that nature. We kind of dove pretty deep. When I say we, it was me. I probably one of the only few in our area. We've got the flow meter, the NFPA 1962 flow test kit. We've got nozzles, all that stuff. My wife's like, what are you gonna do with all this stuff? Still trying to figure that out. Purchased a bunch of fire hose, things like that. So the beauty is, if you go to an organization, it's not, hey, you guys have this hose that's not really the greatest. You show them the limitations and what they can do with it. And this is how you're going to be better with what you have. But if you look into the future, maybe we want to go down this road here. So you're exposing them to the goods and the bads of equipment and purchases and things like that. And I pride myself in this for Western Buckeye training. I don't sell anything. And so, like, it's an honest opinion of what I think of stuff and things of that nature there. So,
Okay.
I'll never sell you a brand or a product or anything like that. I have things that I use for the business because I know that it's solid and it's going to work well.
Right.
But I always let the product speak for itself when it comes to trainings and drills like that. But I always struggle with this part because I don't like talking about, you know what I mean? Like, it's that we're just a bunch of people that love the job and love the
Right.
product service, and
Right.
we just go a little bit further on our days off. And that's what WBT is.
And that's no, that's fine, man. And like I said, I mean, and it's good to know because you could literally be there could be a department that could use something that you guys bring to the table and you can go out there and teach it because that's what it's all about. It's all about helping each other out, teaching.
And and if I don't know it, and this goes to on shift too. If I don't know the answer, I'm not gonna bullshit you. Like, I'm gonna find it. I'll
That's
find you the
big.
answer.
That's
I'll
big.
find you the answer, or I'll send you someone's number that knows it or can lead you down that path that you're looking for. Just straight up, like, I made a mistake as a fire instructor where I was, I gave the wrong answer and I gave some wrong information and I used someone else's slide without permission. Hey, I made a mistake. I got called out on it. I made it right, and that I learned from it. So now I take that experience and I teach others, like, make sure you got all your shit lined up because this will happen 100%. Don't look like a fool like I did. That's just, we all make mistakes in life,
Absolutely.
and you got to learn from it. You got to own it.
Yep.
That's the You're going to do that. You're going to do that in your personal life, and you're going to do that in your professional life. It's all about how you react to it. That shows that growth and that good characteristics.
Definitely, and definitely, and it's great. You're humble because I'm very be doing this. I mean, I mean, with firemen, all you got to do is, hey, do you know this fireman? Yeah. What's his name? Such and such. Good or bad. You know what I mean? Like firemen know the bullshitters and the ones that actually like, yeah, man, every time he's there, he gets 110%. Like we know that. So the fact that you stated that just shows your humility right there. But if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
So we have a website. It's still being built. It's westernbuckeyetraining.com is our website. Facebook, obviously, you can go and find my personal page, Jordan Hemker. Western Buckeye Training has a Facebook page. We have a YouTube page for Western Buckeye Training as well. And then our email address is westernbuckeyetraining@gmail.com. And if anyone, don't call me after like 11, actually like 9:30, I'll be in bed. Anytime you want to talk shop, shoot me a text, 419-233-0643. Give me a shout. I'd love to talk fire service. I can do it all day.
All right. Awesome. Man, Jordan, truly, oh man, I don't want to hold on. I gotta find it. So I like to give credit to when it's due, but you might be able to help me out. I forgot and I apologize. There's just so many names and
Oh
stuff I
yeah.
got going on.
Oh, I know.
Who's the person that hooked me up with you?
I think it was Mike Center. Was it Mike?
Okay. I think oh man, I gotta find the email. I should have prepared a little bit.
Let me go through my messages here.
I will find it. I know I got to because I like to because this is what keeps me going because I was at work and I was on shift and I get an email and I during my downtime I read it and this person was like, hey man, I got a perfect guy who you need to talk to and such and such. So I gotta find it because
Yeah,
I'm feeling bad.
it was Nathan Center.
Yes, Nathan Center. Thank you.
Yep. He goes by
Yes.
Mikey as well.
Okay.
Good dude. Real good dude.
Yeah. Yeah, so Nathan, I truly appreciate it because it's people like Nathan that hook me up to get where I get to know people like Jordan because I'm in North Carolina, you're in Central Ohio. We don't know each other, but now we do.
Oh
And
yeah.
it's the same, it's the fact that what I'm trying to promote is what you actually do. I always tell people I'm just a dude behind a mic. I think the real game changers are the people that have instructing cadres go out and teach. So thank you for doing what you do.
I
Truly
appreciate
appreciate
it, man.
it.
I appreciate the opportunity to ramble on your podcast. I always struggle because I don't like talking about, that self-promotion, that kind of,
Right, right.
that's just one of those things that kind of goes against the grain a little bit. But I appreciate the opportunity. I really enjoyed it. I hope we can do some more in the future, and
Yeah.
hopefully here we can meet up at a fire conference and talk in person,
Hey, you
because
never know, man.
you
There's
never
so
know,
many
dude.
of them.
I know.
I might just, I mean, that's how I've met some people that I've only met through social media. And then I'm like, hey, aren't you? And they're like, yeah. And then it's like,
Yeah.
bam, we're at the
Yep.
same thing. We didn't even know it.
It's
So.
nuts, because same thing, like you go out and you're training and training and training. And you're like, I know that guy from somewhere, but I just can't quite put it. Oh, it's they were on such and such's page
Right.
or whatever. But yeah,
Right.
that's the beauty of the fire service, man. It's a small world.
Definitely.
Small world.
Definitely, man. But I appreciate you coming on, accepting the invite, man, and talking the good word.
Absolutely.
All right,
Appreciate
pal. You have a good day.
Hey, you too, man. Take care.
All right.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.